Hi, everybody. I am Scott Stewart at the University of Tennessee, and I'm going to give a presentation that I gave at the ICE conference. It had me in a room that held 3,000 people, and if you were one of the 10 people in that room when I gave that presentation, I'm sorry, you're going to see the same information. Actually, the data I'm going to present is the research of my postdoc, Dr. Mohammed Al-Barak, who's done a really great job. He's got a lot of experiments going, ongoing. He's got several things being published or in the process of being reviewed. And, of course, it's looking at the influence of agriculture and pesticide exposure on honeybees. And, of course, this is still the rage. It's still a big deal. I was talking with Chip Graham just the other day, and he said Canada's announced essentially they're phasing out all neonicotinoids within 3 years. Probably imidacloprid only. What's next? We don't know how much of that's based on science. I've got a pretty good idea. It's not particularly all based on science. Got a lot of cooperators in this project. It's a big project. I'm gonna show you a bunch of data. I'm gonna show a bunch of slides you couldn't possibly comprehend in the short period of time, and then I'm just gonna try to tell you what they mean. So this is the exact thing you tell a graduate student not to do. So these studies were done in West Tennessee. Funded primarily through a contract from the USDA ARS, and I just put this slide in there to make sure I acknowledge that support and appreciate it. We had four study sites where we put established apiaries in these four sites. One of the sites down there in the bottom right says NAG. That means it was a non-agricultural area. The other sites had various levels of agricultural influence, in some cases urban influence. Really, these are just maps showing you the agricultural influence. The yellow is the corn, green soybeans, red's cotton, the darker green is sorghum. And I really just kind of wanted to give an overview of how much variation. If you go to the non-ag area, that was actually a state park. It was essentially a wooded area, really no ag within the immediate 3 mile area. The most intense area, which Muhammad called Yum Yum because it's on Yum Yum Road, was very intensive agriculture. And then we had a site at the Jackson Experiment Station, which has quite a bit of ag, but outside the center itself, in the bee foraging range, there isn't a lot of agriculture. And then we had a site at the Milan Experiment Station, which is fairly intensive agriculture as well. And this would just be a typical setup for an apiary. He'd usually have 6 or 8 hives there, but he had 4 hives, which were the experimental hives. They were set up with the same genetics as good as they could. They're using the same queen genetics. The white boards out in front are actually look at bee mortality, what they call front door mortality. And actually each hive, not in all locations, but in most locations, each hives were on these scales that took real time weights throughout the progress of the experiment. And the experiment was essentially run from for a year, from early spring through the following spring. Measured all kinds of things. For example, this is just a snapshot of hive weights. Each one of those lines represents the hive weight. One of the themes I'm going to point out in this presentation is you can start with the exact same number of bees and what you think are the exact same queen genetics, and the hives don't behave the same. There's a lot of variability within and among locations between hives. Bees are very difficult to work with. So again, this is one of these incomprehensible data slides that you're not possibly going to be able to digest. Here's the take home. Each one of those bars on the top represents the colony weight at one particular time for all these hives you have in this location. The little box on the inset and the top shows you the difference between the non-ag areas and the average of the ag areas. Really what I wanted to point out is there's a huge amount of variation in hive weights. The tendency statistically that we saw in this study is the greater the agriculture, the bigger the beehives. I don't think that's a real surprise to a lot of people. Agriculture is a valuable food resource for the honeybees. And that was also true with brood production. If you look at the bottom right hand, again, that's just kind of a summary of the ag areas versus the non-ag areas, but we had higher brood production where we had higher agriculture. Muhammad did some life table type studies where he marked bees, released them, followed the cohort throughout the period of their life. You can see some of the marked bees here that he put out. A lot of work went into this. This is another very complicated slide. Essentially what the data showed in summary, he did this several times throughout the foraging season, is forager mortality of these released bees was essentially the same across locations. He couldn't detect, on average, any difference between forager mortality in the various ag areas or the non-ag area. Probably one of the more interesting things, and the one we argued about the most, I think, a little bit, was varroa mite infestations. He measured varroa mite infestations several times, and there was very clearly lower varroa mites in the non-ag area. And when you looked at those data, those were the smallest hives. When he did varroa mite treatments, the varroa mite treatments were considerably better in those smaller hives. And in fact, when he did the analyses, essentially what he found was varroa mite populations correlated very well with hive size. So you know, somebody looks at this data and says, well, there you have it, ag is increasing varroa mite. It's pesticide exposure is increasing varroa mite. I look at it and say, the ag hives tend to be bigger. They apparently carry a higher load of varroa mite. Not going to get into the viral load data, but there were viruses associated with those varroa mite infestations, and they tended to be higher in the ag areas than the non-ag areas as well. And he measured all kinds of viruses. He worked with David Tarpey in North Carolina on this. I did want to talk a little bit about pesticide exposure. First thing I'm going to show you is insecticides and miticides that was in the wax. And this was new wax. This was the foundation wax. And we've seen this before in some of our previous studies. The wax is contaminated. It's very often contaminated with miticides that people are using to control varroa mites. You do have one hit of imidacloprid in the wax he sampled. This isn't foundation wax. This is the new wax that bees made when they're in the hives. And that hit was in the non-ag area for whatever reason. I don't know if that's perhaps come from foundation wax. However, we know that the fluvalinate, the dicopal, the cumafos, and the that last miticide was in the foundation wax. They were not exposed to this through agriculture. Dicopal, of course, is kelthane, or what we used to call kelthane, not really labeled for varroa mite control. But this foundation wax, this wax you use to start these hives, gets recycled over time. Sometimes these beekeepers try things that aren't labeled to control varroa mite, and the wax is very good at retaining these pesticides. So we see this time and time again. You can see the number one contaminant there is fluvalinate, which is commonly used as a varroa miticide. I think this is really interesting, and I wish I had more time to go into it, but Muhammad also had pollen traps out and collected pollen from these foraging bees. A couple of things that I think are really interesting is in all these areas, he never found any cotton pollen. No cotton pollen at all. And we all know that honeybees don't really like cotton pollen. They will forage on the nectar, but they don't like pollen. He found various levels of corn, soybean, and sorghum pollen, depending on the location and probably the intensity of those crops in those areas. We don't have a lot of sorghum in West Tennessee normally, but that year, the year he did this study, we had about 125,000 acres. It was much more commonly grown that year. Clover was found. Really interesting, when you get into the non-ag areas, of course, there wasn't any egg for those things. They couldn't really find corn pollen, sorghum pollen, soybean pollen, and they were forced to get their pollen from sumac or elderberry or plantain, and that's one of the reasons those bees struggled. They just didn't have good pollen sources, crops as a pollen source. He also looked at pesticide residues in trapped pollen. I think this is interesting. So you see that at the Jackson location, which is kind of a low ag area, the Milan location, a high ag area, the Yum-Yum, which was very high agriculture, and then the Chickasaw. First thing I'll point out is if you look at the Jackson location, we did have a detection of Lorsban. We didn't use Lorsban on the experiment station. I'm the only one that would use it. But we are surrounded by an urban area. So I don't know what those bees found, but they found something that was treated with chlorpyrifos. And it was probably an urban environment, urban treating, not an agricultural one. If you look at the Milan location, we had hits of azoxystrobin and oxamil, bidate. Bidate, it was not used on the experiment station, but those bees certainly could have foraged off the experiment station where they're located. The other agricultural fields were in the range. That's bidate, by the way, which would be used occasionally for plant bug or sink bug control. Interestingly, he had very little found at the Yum-Yum location, a little bit of imidacloprid, but that's it. And at the Chickasaw location, he had a big hit of a fungicide, which would commonly be used in agricultural crops, but there wasn't any agricultural crops in that area, so I don't know what that was. There was some nursery on the state park. Maybe they were using fungicides on that nursery, but we haven't been able to track it down. And this is one of the frustrations of these studies. I've done several of these, and sometimes you just can't figure out what the bees are finding or where they're getting it. We looked at insecticide, miticide concentrations in honey, and essentially the only thing you found was the Varroa miticide fluvalinate, which we did not use in our treatments, but again was a common contaminant of the foundation wax, and it found its way into the honey. This is looking at insecticide, miticide concentrations in bees, both summer foragers and wintering bees. If you look at those concentrations in the wintering bees on the left, you're looking at a product called DMPF, and I'm not going to try to say what that is, but it's actually a metabolite of ametraz. And ametraz is what he used for his varroa mite control. So the only thing we detected in the wintering bees was, in fact, the varroa miticide, or the metabolite of the varroa miticide that we treated with. If you look at the summer foragers, he did have a detection of imidacloprid at the Ag Center in Milan. I have an asterisk down there. We also detected some other pesticides, fungicides, in particular azoxystrobin, and then pendimethalin. That's prowl, right? Yeah. That's not fungicide. Did want to mention this. Muhammad went out and did some spot sampling of flowers. I didn't even know he was doing this. He'd go out and pull flowers from a cotton field. He'd go out and pull them from a soybean field, and he ran an analysis to see what was on those flowers. After he told me he did this, I said, don't do that anymore, because he was just going out in the fields randomly, and he didn't know when they'd been sprayed or not been sprayed. And it's not too surprising. He found some pretty good concentrations of insecticides when he went into some of these fields, particularly the cotton fields. In the cotton and the soybean, he found several different pyrethroids. He found acephate and methimidophos, which is monitor. People aren't spraying monitor, but it's a metabolite of acephate. He also found imidacloprid on cotton and soybean, thymifoxam on cotton. Those things with the asterisks were pretty hot hits. Those were levels of concentrations you might expect would kill honeybees, at least in my opinion and looking at the data. Not real surprising. If you go into a field that's recently been treated, you might find that. He also found several fungicides, primarily paraclostrobin and azoxystrobin, and he found herbicides, atrazine, metallochlor, and metribuzin. I will say that atrazine shows up a lot in beehives, even when you can't quite figure it out, and sometimes it shows up in the foundation wax. I'm not sure there's not some use of these herbicides, like pendimethalin, also around the hives themselves, and it contaminates that wax. Beekeepers using it for weed control. Getting close on my time, but I'm also getting close to the end. One of the things he did measure was front door mortality. So ag hives tended to be healthier, bigger, stronger. That was definitely the case, but we did see instances where pesticide applications killed some bees. And he measured this by looking at the dead bees in front of the hives on those white boards, and he tested those bees for pesticide exposure. And there was no doubt that there were instances where we sprayed products such as thymifoxam or imidacloprid and detected high levels in those dead bees. And I think that's very likely due to agricultural use, almost for certain. I do think it's interesting that he detected in the Milan location carbaryl and naphthol. Naphthol is a metabolite of carbaryl. Again, not used on the experiment station, but there are some nurseries in the foraging range of the bees at that Milan experiment station. So we didn't see this a lot, but, you know, there's no doubt we can kill bees with pesticides in some circumstances, and I don't want to dismiss that. If you look at hive losses over the years, or over that one-year period, he only had four hives in the non-ag area. He lost two of four of those. The other two have since died. He wasn't feeding those bees. He was trying to let them fend for themselves, and they just didn't have enough food. It was clearly starvation-related. In the non-ag areas, he lost three of 12 hives. Really wasn't clear why. You had queenlessness in some hives. They weren't starving. They had food stores. Overall, we had about 31% hive losses in this experiment, which is very consistent with what's been reported in recent years in Tennessee. So I got about 45 seconds to make some conclusions, and I'll just make the ones I've already made. The pesticide exposure that we saw in agri areas did not result in measurable impacts on hive health. We saw some front door mortality and things like that, but overall we couldn't statistically show that actually hurt hives. In fact, what the data showed was agriculture tended to improve the health of the hives. The more ag you had, the stronger the hive. We did see, again, front door mortality. I'm not showing you the complete data set. The miticide issue, the pesticide contaminants, varroa mite. I think there's some really interesting things in these data sets. So I'd encourage you all to look for Dr. Albaraki's publications that will be coming out in the very near future. I see I used all my time, and my grad student may not let me field a question, but I'd be happy to answer one. I appreciate everybody's attention.